Hey, what's going on? This is Jeremy Thone, Marketing Director of 3PL Systems and host of 3PL Live. I'm excited to share a podcast with my good friend, Whitney Johnson Cowell. Ran into Whitney actually at Manifest. She's a wonderful marketer that works at KCH Transportation. She also has a podcast called The Mediocre Marketer. And then this session, we get into five trends for 2024 for marketing, and she has some great stuff in store. Hope you enjoy. Hey, Whitney, thanks for coming on to 3PL Live for the second time. It's always great to speak with other marketers in the supply chain industry. And you have a new podcast out, The Mediocre Marketer, which I thought was a clever name as well. So catch people up with like what you're up to at KCH Transportation and the new podcast and everything you're up to.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be back. Mediocre Marketer, we're in season one. I don't know how most people label their episodes. Mine's seasons, I guess.
Sure, that's fair. That's a season, yeah.
It's something that I've considered doing for a couple of years now and just really didn't have, I think I was just scared to do it, to be completely frank with you.
At the end of the day, I think a lot of the things that stop us are fear, like even content on like LinkedIn. I think podcasts is like one step further because it's like anyone could go write content now with like ChatGPT. It's not very hard to go do a prompt and like switch a couple words around. I mean, it's hard psychologically speaking, I'll say. Let's get into 2024 marketing strategy. Let's talk about five things that you're thinking about this year. And I guess we could start from number one and we can kind of just riff on each one if you wouldn't mind.
So there's a lot of things that I think are evolving and not just completely changing in a 180 direction in 2024. Some of the things are what I'm implementing, you know, at my day job, and other things are kind of what I'm watching happen. And so in-person events are back. That's no secret. I love talking about in-person events. I love talking about virtual events because I think that there is a space where they are making a comeback in a really big way. The COVID era, I think we were super burnt out on webinars and virtual events and marking our calendars and overcommitting ourselves and getting kind of bored and not engaging, because I think we were kind of figuring out the way to provide online meeting spaces with content that matters in a way where people can engage. And those are a lot of elements to put into one place. I think now we're starting to see companies reincorporate the idea of a virtual event that is very niche to what they're doing. It's very specific to the customers and the prospects that are attending. And I think we're starting to see a narrative shift from it being a numbers game of, oh, this many people attended, to these are the people that attended and gained value from it. So while not really something as like a 3PL that we're doing, that is something that I am watching happen in not just the supply chain, but in a lot of other spaces. Like the tech spaces are really leaning into that. There are certain, which I would say would be the biggest one at this point. And then of course there are other companies that we'll see kind of follow suit, but that's a really interesting one for 2024. And I'm excited to see the numbers at the end of the year of people's success stories through that.
Yeah. I want to talk to you for a few more minutes about this because I find it interesting as well. For one, I agree with you. I think virtual events are super cool. One comes to mind, Game Changers of Freight Tech. Shout out to Chris Arredondo and Jesse Thomas over there. They did a great job for a small team making that event with like, I think they had like 16 speakers or something like that. And just did a great job with like also bringing together like people that are semi competitors, like Green Screens. And I think Cargo Chief have some overlapping features. So like, I think it's cool that they're like kind of just being adults and just saying, hey, let's get together. Let's make this event. Let's make it happen. I thought it was cool. So they stand out to me. I think one question I have before we go into the in-person events, like what do you see the difference between like a webinar and an event, I guess? Is there like, is an event more dynamic? It has like more speakers, and a webinar is just sort of more cookie cutter and boring? Or like, what is the difference? Because I don't really know.
I mean, yes, there's freedom to define it how you want to.
Sure.
To me, I see a webinar as being a little bit more educational, a little bit more informative. An event I see as something that's a little bit more dynamic. In a webinar, I wouldn't anticipate too many like networking spaces, breakout rooms, things like that, where people can go and chat. And I think sponsorship is another key piece there. Webinars probably aren't going to have the opportunity to have as many sponsors as maybe an event would.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I feel like some of the small, or not smaller, but I feel like you don't necessarily need to have as big of an audience as a creator to have sponsors. Because I've seen some, even some newer podcasts that already have sponsors, which is interesting. I think if you have a very niche market that you talk to like a very specific set of people, it doesn't really, it's, you're not going to have like a huge scale of people. Like, I think it's like, it's more about like the concentration of people. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's going to be quality over the quantity. And I think maybe in a few, like a few years ago, the quantity was really important because people wanted to see if it would work. Mm. And I think now we're starting to see, okay, but what is the ROI on that? Am I sponsoring some virtual event where people aren't attending? And if they are, they're not really sure what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they don't stick around. Like, that to me is not a good and qualified audience. I would rather have four people attend knowing that they're genuinely interested in whatever that product is going to be, who the speakers are and what they have to offer, than people that just kind of like stumble into it and then bounce out after, you know, if it's a 1 hour event or webinar that's happening, they leave after the first 15 because they don't think that that is worth the calendar time that they blocked off.
Mm, that's fair. Let's talk a little bit about in-person events. And this is kind of top of mind too, because we're going to Manifest, me, Cameron, and Mike from our team. And I honestly, like, we've talked to a couple partners like Parade and, you know, other, a few other partners are going to be out there about meeting up. And since they're already going to be at the show, and Cargo Chief as well. Mm-hmm. I never really know what to do with myself at these events. Like, I usually just go walk around the booth and try to like network and try to like do some sort of LinkedIn post or something like that. But do you have any like strategy or any things that you try to do when you're at these events, if you're not having a booth, but if you're just cruising around?
Yeah. So I like to reach out to people beforehand and make sure that we have a space to connect. And I take it a little bit further than like, hey, would love to see you there, or let's catch up, you know, on day two. I try to be really intentional about like, let's meet for breakfast. Let's mm-hmm. grab lunch together. I'm going to be on the, you know, trade show floor around this time. Let's meet at this booth, you know, and there are certain companies that offer real booth experiences. And I could talk all day about that. Mm. But, you know, like last year at Manifest, One Rail had an incredible like beer garden. That was very fun. That's a really easy place to say, let's meet there. There's going to be the puppy play zone again.
I like you know, you can catch me there for sure.
I met with somebody there and said, let's just catch up and have a quick chat. We sat on the floor, pet puppies, and that's where we had our little networking moment. And I think in doing so, you also leave space to network with the people that you're trying to gain business with, as well as making space for your actual friends that you want to network with. And for me, I like to be a little bit more organized. Manifest has an app. Would highly recommend that and booking those appointments in advance. And that way you kind of know what your day is going to look like.
Love that. That's totally fair. And I think it's really interesting like how some of these booths have like beer gardens and puppies. And yeah, I love it. I think it's super cool. What do you think for number two on our list for 2024 marketing?
I think we're going to see more audience generated content over influencer content. And I'm excited about that. I think of that in my mind, I think of that as the difference between like with internal communications, telling people, go engage with our content. We just published this. You know, there are actual companies that do that with their employees versus creating such a good experience with those people that they feel encouraged to do so on their own. I'm thinking that in 2024, we are going to see more like user generated content sort of organically hitting the scene, instead of forcing some of those conversations or some of the paid interactions.
I think that's fair. Now, are we talking about, so like when we talk about like an Apple phone, for example, and everyone's taking pictures using an Apple phone, they have so many customers that they can get a lot of like user generated content. You're in a different business than we are as well. We're like more on like the tech side of things. So would you be considering like our customers doing it or our staff or both?
I would say for user generated, it would be definitely customers. That's where you're going to have, it's sort of like the new age word of mouth,
sure,
but it's going to primarily live on social platforms.
That makes sense.
It, I think that that's a more powerful. So it is exciting that that's a transition that we're starting to see happen, not to knock influencer marketing, but specifically in the supply chain, that doesn't always work.
We've been doing a lot of like video testimonials. We actually hired Trey to do one for us where they interviewed one of our clients. Getting the words from them is the way to go, but getting them to actually create the content, I'm not quite sure how to like get them to do that quite yet. I would assume we'd have to like incentivize them somehow. Any thoughts on that? Like on how to get them to actually make the content?
I think that's up to the person that's doing it. Now, organic is always best just because you know that that person or that customer, that company had a great experience and they felt compelled to give you a shout out online, to leave a review, to fill out a survey. And for some of those, you do need to ask for it. You need to provide a space for them to do that. So, you know, sure. I think a lot of people have been afraid in a down market to ask for feedback.
Because you're worried about the bad stuff, maybe.
Right. But we need to create that space for our customers. So I would say don't be afraid to reach out and ask for that. But also, like you said, the testimony, video testimonials, which video content is another one that I think is happening in 2024.
Oh, for sure.
It makes sense. But
we'll that's put that in slot three.
Yeah, it probably is. But, as far as how do you navigate going about that? I think setting up time, reaching out to them, saying we've had a wonderful time working with you and calling you a partner. We would love to hear your feedback is a very appropriate way to begin that conversation. I don't think that it always has to be paid. And I think sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it's not necessary. That is a place where you can kind of maybe reevaluate your budget.
Mm. That's interesting because I actually was at Kaiser. It's like a medical facility out here in LA. And they had like a thing, like a feedback form. Like then they had two sections. They were like, hey, if like you're really upset and pissed off, call this number and speak to a manager. And they had another one above it that said, hey, if you're happy, fill out a form here. I thought that was interesting because like it kind of gave them like the opportunity to like at least solve the pissed off person's problem before they go online and start just, you know, jabbing at them or whatever. So I don't know.
I love that. That's memorable. It's creative. And if you have a good experience and you saw that, you'd probably have a little chuckle and want to engage.
Mm-hmm. One other thing I'll add for two, I agree with your user-generated content. I think that that's super cool and I love it. Another one I'll say is like people internally, right? Like Mike Sternberg's on our staff, like creating content now, and our new sales rep, Anthony, is creating content. So I think that part of it is also like my job to be like, hey, like you guys know you can create content. It's okay. And like, here's kind of like some baselines. Don't talk about politics. Don't argue with people online. Go be yourself, you know, have fun. Go create a personality and do your thing or whatever and be like a thought leader. But, you know, I guess there is certain rules, but I think that's another thing as a marketer that I see is like we all have people buy from people and then people are a part of a brand, essentially. It's like a bunch of things that make up the brand or whatever. And every experience that you have with the org is part of like the overall brand. I see like low-hanging fruit with like anyone that's like sociable that wants to create content, like encourage them to do it and then encourage them to like do stuff that you might not see like in the warehouse or whatever. And I don't know, I think that's also kind of an interesting thing that maybe will happen more so eventually. You see like teams doing it like Freightvana, for example, like where they had like Ricky and they had Josh and Shannon and all their different people all sort of doing their own thing, but all sort of working together to sort of create this sort of brand awareness.
Yeah, and that's such a good point. I mean, it is no secret that unless if you're a household name, people buy from people, not from brands. People follow people, not brands. The outliers, Duolingo has like an unhinged social media. That's fun, people follow that. However, it is important, I think, to have people within the company excited about the company. And if that isn't happening, either A, they don't know. They, like you said, encouraging people, especially in the marketing role, if you have an internal marketer, I think that there is a little bit of a social responsibility to show people this is how this works. So like I went around, so we have 7 offices. I traveled last year to each of our 7 offices and did a LinkedIn workshop with each of them. hey, this is the basics of what the algorithm does. This is how you get started. These are things to maybe consider. You know, if you have questions, then I'm happy to be of assistance. By no means is this me telling you you have to do anything, but enough people have asked the questions where I just want to sit everybody down and say, this is how you can get started if you choose to. And then we had a separate session for the sales reps of using LinkedIn in a very smart way that doesn't
not the pitch slapping
people. Hey. Yes, and how to sell socially. So
you have a dog and a cat. You breathe. You free tomorrow?
Yes. And it's an important skill if people choose to do it. And it absolutely helps the company's reputation when you have people that are kind of building their own brand and they take it seriously. They're sort of, you know, they're representatives of the company at that point.
100%. I love that. I think it's super cool. And it's like stuff that already exists without really having to go buy more. It's just like a little bit of tweaking and strategy. And I think that's really cool that you went on that little tour of 7 different offices. That sounds like a lot of work, actually. Do you guys use like a content platform or something with like that amount of offices? Or do you use something to keep organized with all your marketing materials or something like that?
I mean, we do have like a task management system that my team uses, and the marketing team all sits in one office together. So while
that's nice,
we could do remote if we wanted to. We found talent right where we were. And so, of course, if we could have them in-house, that was really helpful, especially as we started welcoming interns. So we don't normally go a semester without having at least one intern on the team, because I think it's important to give back and to teach the next generation of professionals.
Oh, absolutely. What they're getting themselves into.
Well-rounded, because when everybody sits together, they get to see different pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's cool. I don't want to put number three in your mouth, but you did mention video. Is that going to be number three, video and audio, something like that?
I think that it is. Podcasts, they're a dime a dozen these days. I mean, they're everywhere. All these different platforms that you can find them on, that you can stream through, that you can record on. So there's abundance for podcasters, but I think we're going beyond that. Video selling, video pitches, video beyond ads, just video content about solutions and products are becoming very, very popular.
What do you think the deal is with like not a seller or as a creator? I mean, I actually have some stuff to go live or to do some video this year. I bought like a switch, so like my camera angle will switch to a different camera. So it's like almost like a live editing kind of thing, so that I don't know, so I could save a little bit of time or whatever. That kind of stuff, I think that video is really interesting. I do think that like if I'm going to do my own video, like I experimented with some shorts last year and they're usually pretty punchy. Like they're like, I don't even say my name. It's just like straight to the point. You know, it's like hook, boom, 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 boom. Because otherwise it's like people are not going to listen. It's going to be, and I'm not like, it's a hard skill. So I get it. Like I understand like why people don't go on video as much as they do, because it's not super easy. Any things that you've learned from your experiences with the podcast on video and just and shaking the nerves or in general?
So with my podcast, I'm not going to say I'm an expert in video or audio editing. To be completely frank, I have a little jingle I throw at the beginning, throw it again at the end. That's my editing. That's it. Sure. So you know, what you see is what you get. If you make a mistake on the podcast, that's okay. It's probably still going to air. The company, we launched a podcast a little over a year ago called Shifting Gears, and it has been very fun to watch the evolution of that. I go back to some of the beginning episodes and we changed what the content was. We changed the length of the podcast. We changed who was on camera. We've really dabbled into far and wide efforts of what
you learn a lot too.
We've had a couple of videos, I mean, really get kind of viral, and it's been fun to see what those were and how they came about. And now on the sales side of things, there are a lot of platforms. Like HubSpot has integrations with a couple of platforms where you can make your own like video pitch embedded in an email and then send that off. I've received a few of those. I've also received a few of those. I actually got one to literally this morning on LinkedIn of somebody doing video sales where they're introducing themselves, a quick little something, a little bit about the product, and like, hey, I would love to actually chat with you instead of just recording this video for you.
That's cool.
It was well done.
Being in front of people and making actually like content or whatever versus just I don't know, the outbound sales process. What do you say for number four? So we got in-person events, virtual events, user-generated content, video. What do you got for number four?
Almost to go back to events, I would say sponsorships are something that are kind of evolving right now. And I'm here for it.
Like newsletters, you mean, that type of thing? Or like
newsletters, events, you know, you name it, it's happening. And I think it's really great because for a couple of years there, specifically the job that I was at, I was seeing people sponsor things when they weren't really sure what the value was that they were going to gain from it. The transparency in the people that are selling sponsorships and what that is truly going to offer and providing more opportunities in ways that are a bit more customized to different companies, their sizes, their needs, their audiences. I'm starting to see more of that as we as a company are looking to make certain investments in our sponsorships. I think a lot of organizations are realizing that the one size fits all, or like the three packages of, you know, sponsorship opportunities are no longer sufficient for every type of event or newsletter or whatever that may be.
That makes sense. What do you look for, I guess, just out of curiosity, for those people out there that have newsletters, podcasts, mm-hmm. video shows, you name it. There's like events. There could be a million different things. Like going back to, I guess, like not knowing necessarily, it seems like a lot of our industry too is very small and niche. Like even like us, for example, we're like, we work just primarily with transportation brokers, which are like, there's, I don't know, 18,000 of them or something like that. It's a very small number, right? The end of the day, like, it seems like a lot of these, like, how do you know, like, what to sponsor when, like, you know that the reach is going to be small, like, no matter what, I guess. Like, you know, like, the biggest names aren't really doing anything that's even that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I look for, and most people are going to say, I want an attendees list, right? Which is basically saying, give me a lead list.
Yeah.
That's, most organizations are not just going to hand that over. Unless if you are a sponsor. And even then, there are certain levels of sponsorship that you have to reach in order to have that. And then others, you know, if you're an attendee and you've registered, then that's free game if they have like a portal where it's available. So every organization is a little bit different, especially depending on like what the event is, how big the event is, how long it's been around, if it's local, if it's some like national event, you know, like for example, Manifest is a great one to say, you can see everybody that's going. You register, you log into the app, you can see absolutely everybody. Doesn't mean you'll get their information. Whereas local events, a lot of times, if you sponsor with them, they'll send you a copy of like, these are all the companies that are going to be here.
Is there any ethical considerations you think for any of that, just out of curiosity? I mean, I don't really care on my end, but I'm just more curious, I guess. Is there like, it just seems like you might like piss your customers off if like we were like, here's a list of all of our clients.
Mm-hmm. Some places that readily hand over that information, I am very hesitant to work with. I'm not going to name drop because
you
can do a Google search and you'll find stuff all over the place. But I am more hesitant towards those. Now, what we look for in sponsorships is if we have, there's usually two different goals. One is we're trying to show up and have thought leadership there. So if there's an opportunity to speak or to be on stage, I want to know who is sitting in the audience that's going to be hearing this. So not just, hey, how many people are attending this event? How many did you have last year? But can you give me a breakdown of the industries that are in attendance? And could you give me maybe some demographics of titles? What do those look like? I don't necessarily need to know the people, but are there a lot of sales reps that are coming here hoping to gain business? Or are we looking at the C-suite that is here to network, to learn, and maybe to strengthen some of their existing partnerships?
That's fair.
Really important to me.
I like that. I think that makes sense. You're very logical and everything that you're saying makes sense to me. So number four, sponsorships. What about closing out with number five? What is our 2024 number five strategy of the year?
Oh, the strategy of the year. That's a tough, I've had a hard time coming up with like just five in the list, but I think people are going to start reevaluating their tech stacks. And I know that is a very standard conversation for a lot of companies. Usually annually, we're looking at our budget. A contract is coming to an end. Let's review it. How did it go for us? But I think more and more companies are integrating, you know, I would be a fool if I didn't say AI. Well, and so we we dabble with ChatGPT. I mean, I use that probably on a weekly basis, but on my marketing team and what I had everybody do over like summer to fall of 2023, I gave each person 3 to 4 AI technologies that were specific to their role on the team and had them use those, either the free version or sign up for the demo. If it was like a 7-day, 14-day free trial, report back how it helped or did not help them do their job. And that to me was a very interesting experiment to see. I liked this platform, and also 2 other people on the team that are in writing or social roles also enjoyed using that platform. So maybe this is something that we consider integrating into our daily. Now, a lot of people like to just use ChatGPT, copy, paste.
Oh, yeah, if you're not using it
correctly, it's not going to be helpful if you're not using it correctly. It's actually, I think, going to cause a lot of frustration in your results.
You have to be a good copywriter. You can't like just use whatever it says. I actually have a book for you. This book's really good. I don't know if you can see that, the Boron Letters. It's It's a direct response copywriter that's like writing all his son all these letters in jail, but the type of people that do just like the mail stuff. So there's like no like getting around whether or not the copy worked, because like you sent the mailers, they sent the money back. There is no like if, ands, or buts. It's just like all about like, I don't know. I feel like ChatGPT is, I only use it for idea generation. All right. Like, for example, like, hey, I need 50 ideas for the name of this podcast, include Whitney Johnson Cowell or whatever, that type of thing, and include marketing, include this, that, and that. And then I'll run that, and then I'll just chop it up until it's something that I want. The only other thing that I use it for is, if I write a post and like I want it like a sounding board, I'll go like, hey, what is the message here? What did I miss? What's another angle? Mm-hmm. And that's how I use it. I never use it for just like, because it uses words that irritate me, like revolutionize, or like the certain things that are, there's just certain words that you just know that it's just like buzzwords that are just throw up words or whatever.
And like, sometimes, you know, what we'll do is you can say like, remove any fluff, any transition words, make it on a third grade level as far as like the verbiage is being used. So there are like different things that you can add into a prompt. But what we found to be better, and I say that with hesitation because ChatGPT can do a lot. The only reason that hit the market so hard and people were so excited is because it was such an easy to use blank slate of a platform. About a year before we were talking about that. So in 2022, I started using Jasper AI.
I used Jasper for a while too.
Yeah, it's been a main part of what I've been doing for my role. And then I stepped back from Jasper AI and I started using Copy AI. Jasper has made a couple of updates that I really like. So on our team, we dabbled with Jasper and Copy because I wanted to get other people's opinions instead of just like my experiences over the last like year and a half of using it. We use Bard and Writer.
Bard's been, Google, right?
I think so. And we've seen some good results. You know, they're pretty tailored to content creation, different types of written copy. And that has been very helpful for our team. It's been a very useful tool, and we use AI on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a tool. I mean, I don't think it's like going to replace human intelligence or creativity or any of those other things, but I do like it for like a sounding board. Hey, is there anything misspelled, or did I like miss, am I missing something here? or like confirming a date, for example, if like there's an update happening, I want to know like that's tonight, or like that the time is there and that I'm not missing anything, like little double checks like that. And I agree with you. I do a lot of constraints to like remove, like give me this in 10 words, or give me this and, you know, just all sorts of things like that to like refine like the prompt. And like, and I did use Jasper for a while too. I did like Jasper. I'm not familiar with Copy AI. Do you like that one? Is that one pretty good?
It's not as robust as some of the other ones, but it is pretty good. I used that one for about 6 to 8 months just to be more familiar with it. And I don't use it as much anymore because I'm not the primary writer on the team. We have a writer. That one was decent, but it's not ultimately the one that won over the team.
Sure. And I guess last question for you, and we'll wrap up. What about like, if you do, I'm pretty sure you told me you guys write newsletters. What do you guys use to write your newsletter? Is it like HubSpot, or do you guys use like a third party app? Because we use MailerLite and it's okay. I don't love it. Like I want something else, but I don't know what. So that's why I'm asking.
We migrated off of HubSpot in 2023. It was a real moment of sadness for me because I love HubSpot. Our teams are now
a lot of work in too.
Salesforce. Yeah, we're now in Salesforce. Salesforce is great. It's a huge, robust system. It takes a lot longer to learn to stand up your automations to kind of get everybody on the same page. There's so many more customized elements that you can add in. So it is a bear of a process. This is my second time being in a company that has migrated from HubSpot to Salesforce. So at least I was kind of familiar with the process and what that was going to look like. As far as emailing, I opted out of the Salesforce marketing platform because I've used it before and I didn't think that it was worth financially what we were going to be using it for. So right now our newsletters are sent out of Constant Contact, and I would also say that it is fine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that anything works, whatever it is that you need, as long as it's working the way you want it to. Right. Out of curiosity too, when they did the move from HubSpot to Salesforce, did you guys hire like some sort of engineer to go do that? Or did you have to like go there and make the migration yourself, out of curiosity?
We have a DevOps team, so we have internal people that were able to handle that.
Thank God, that sounds like a nightmare.
We did have a third party kind of jump in for a piece of it, but they did not handle the entire migration.
Yeah, migrations are never fun. I've definitely been involved in some of those. Like where we had to like move.
If you can avoid it.
Migrations are no fun. But Whitney, that was a great conversation. It was super fun. Where do we send people if they want to learn more about you, the podcast, KCH, et cetera?
Well, if you want to learn more about me, just head to my LinkedIn. It's Whitney Johnson Cowell. And if you want to learn more about KCH and podcasting, mine is The Mediocre Marketer. Our company's is Shifting Gears.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for sticking around to the end of that episode with Whitney Johnson-Cowell over at KCH Transportation. Got to agree with her. I thought all of her tips were super good. You got the in-person and virtual events, user-generated content, video selling, which I kind of see getting more popular, sponsorships, and reevaluating your tech stack. So she had some great points. It was lovely getting to talk to other marketers. If you enjoy our show, please make sure to review us on Spotify or Apple. Share us with a friend. It helps us grow our show, and we appreciate you sticking around to the end and listening to us. Have a wonderful weekend.